What's up, pardon my pancreas? Today we've got a special episode for you. There are a few episodes that are grouped together from an event called JDRF Type 1 Nation Summit, Meet the Scientists, that your two hosts, Matt and Ali, had the pleasure of attending recently in San Diego, California, at the La Jolla Institute for Immunology. Now, the La Jolla Institute for Immunology is a world-famous research institute where scientists from around the globe study the immune system. They're trying to understand what goes wrong when we develop an autoimmune disease like type 1 diabetes and how we can engage, employ, or activate the immune system to prevent and cure disease. So without any further ado, let's get into today's interview. And this episode is brought to you by FTF Warrior, an online health coaching company for diabetics. And we will go further by saying this is not medical advice in any manner. We are not doctors. We will never be doctors. And nothing said on this podcast is meant to replace your doctor's order. So consult your doctors before you make changes. Without any further ado, let's get into... Hello, pardon my pancreas podcast listeners. We are back again with another amazing intellectual scientist. We're going to chat about some pretty detailed stuff today. We have Christine Bender on today. So thank you so much, Christine, for coming to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thank you.
Now, Christine, you graduated from the University of Applied Sciences in Mannheim, Germany, with a Master of Science degree in biotechnology. That's a lot. What can you tell us about biotechnology?
Now, I just picked it because I liked it. It was interesting. And I always wanted to go into research, especially diabetes research. And I picked biotechnology because it sounded exciting and I wanted to understand diseases, and basically that's the reason, yeah.
Wow. So back in the day, I tried my hand at investing in biotechnology, but I have no idea how that stuff works. It sounds like a really complicated topic. Was that something you wanted to go into your whole life, or did you just find that passion later on?
Yeah, later on, actually, yeah. I always wanted to help people, and I always wanted to understand diseases, right, in order to find therapies. And I decided biotechnology, maybe it's a good way to start with, you know, and because it opens you the door maybe to go to industry too, and or to study basic science. So it was like a broad spectrum of every topic, and I really liked it.
That's awesome. What can you tell me about your thesis focusing on glutamic acid decarboxylase? It's a big word.
Yeah, no, I did. It was my master's degree. Back then, it was diploma thesis. And I was analyzing serum from school children who had no background, like no family members with type 1 diabetes, just to see whether they have a high risk to develop autoantibodies or type 1 diabetes.
So how does developing the antibodies work? Are there triggers for that, or is it completely random roulette, or are there genetic dispositions for that?
Yeah, there are, of course, there are genes, we call them HLA genes, and some of the kids, they had some genes, but they had no family members, and we found out that if you have the genes, the risk to develop these autoantibodies against specific markers in your body, I don't know how specific I can be, the higher the risk is to develop further autoantibodies or even type 1 diabetes. And I was just analyzing, because usually when you when kids are in trials, right, then they run the tests and they look for autoantibodies, and they usually invite families or families with type 1 diabetes history. And in this study, the exciting part of the study was that to include school children with no family history. Just to see how often, how high is the risk in a general population without like family members with type 1 diabetes. Because if you have a mother or father with type 1, the risk to develop type 1 itself is higher.
Right. That's actually really interesting, because I had no family history of type 1 diabetes. But then as soon as I got it, my little sister got it, which was frustrating. But I'm also glad that I was able to pave that road for her, because she saw that she had type 1 diabetes, but she'd already been around it for a year or a year and a half by that time, because she saw me dealing with it.
So you developed first?
I did develop it first, yeah, as the older brother. So I took that as my role as like the protector. You know, I taught her how to deal with her diabetes. But in all honesty, she's grown up quick, and I think she might even have better control than I do at this point. She's very good about controlling her diabetes and living her life. She just got back from a trip to Thailand, and she does all the fun stuff. But it is very interesting, and that's also a reason why my wife and I have had conversations about do I want to pass on type 1 diabetes. And you know, ultimately, we think it's worth a shot because we want to have kids, but
of course,
it is a little bit nerve-wracking to think about I could pass on this terrible disease.
The risk is low, actually, like a few percent.
Is it really?
7%.
Like, oh my goodness, that's so comforting.
I think the risk is low. It really depends, but...
Right, I'm sure there are a lot of factors to take into consideration.
Yeah, there are a lot of factors influenced, but...
So how do you go about studying this? I know we've been hearing a lot about NPOD. Is that taken into consideration for this?
So we're using, in our case...
Actually, what is NPOD? I guess you can start there.
Network for Pancreatic Organ Donors with Diabetes. But NPOD is a nonprofit organization.
And really?
Yeah, they collect and process pancreas sections, but other organs to help us to study type 1 diabetes in the human pancreas.
Hmm.
Because in the last even 50 years, we were studying mouse on mice.
Right, the mouse model, right?
Yeah, yeah, different mouse models. And we were able to prevent and to protect diabetes and to cure diabetes in mice in 100 different ways, you know. But we cannot translate the results into humans, and that's why we must study the human pancreas.
The humans, right.
And you know, every human is unique, and human samples are very rare and difficult to obtain.
I'm sure.
Difficult to get. So they're doing an amazing job collecting the organs and distributing them all over the world. And we're collaborating with other people from all over Europe. There are many groups in Europe studying human samples. And what we're doing here is we're looking at immune cells which contribute to, or may might cause the disease. So specifically in my case, I'm looking at the white blood cells, CD8 cells, and I'm trying to characterize the number in type 1 to D cases, but also in healthy person, like to compare how many are in a healthy pancreas, are there some, and where are they located in the pancreas. And also in recent onset cases, like people who just developed diabetes but died because of other reasons. And but also in autoantibody positive cases, we call them at-risk cases, so who might develop diabetes, just to see how the number of the cells and the status of the cells changes the disease progression and how they contribute to disease development. And we know that CD8 cells are one of the important cells that destroy the beta cells who produce insulin, right? And but we don't understand where, we don't know yet where are they located, and why are they in the islets, for example, or close to the islets? Why are they attacking the beta cells, specifically beta cells? Why are they destroying them? And what do they recognize? Usually they protect us from infections, and they don't destroy our own body's cells. And in type 1 diabetes, they recognize maybe a peptide, a molecule, a structure of our, maybe our own insulin structure or other structures in the beta cells. And see it as a, I recognize it as a sporing molecule, and then attack and kill the beta cells.
Wow.
So, and so my project is about characterizing these cells, studying the number, and see where are they located in the pancreas, like because the pancreas is big, it's a big organ, and just 1 to 2% of the whole pancreas are actually islets, so they're distributed within the whole pancreas. And some of them, especially in type 1 cases, we found, or in general, thanks to NPOD, investigators found that even after 8 or 10 years of diabetes duration, some islets still contain insulin-producing beta cells. So if, even after a long period of time, we can still find these cells, and they still produce insulin. And we also find some CD8 T cells, or they're still present, or there's an immune attack ongoing. And it's interesting to understand what's happening at the moment, right? And how we can maybe prevent the immune attack, you know, from destroying the beta cell. How can we block, for example, these cells, or what exactly do they recognize in order to, you know, prevent the destruction of these cells? So
it's actually really interesting. Recently, I got curious, and I went and had my C-peptide test done, which measures the beta cell output. Mm-hmm. And I've had diabetes now for over 9 years, and I still have a minuscule amount.
Yeah, you have
a tiny bit, but it's still there.
Yeah,
it's
that
still
means
trying.
You still have some beta cells, and that's what we learned from NPOT, or thanks to NPOT and thanks to the sections they provided. Yeah, we can see that, because even what I do, I perform immunostainings, and I stain for glucagon and I stain for insulin, right? And I can detect insulin in like long-term cases, long-term donors.
Wow.
And it's really amazing that even after 8 years, you can still find intact beta cells. So not all of them are gone. It's not like after disease onset, it's not an absolute loss of beta cells.
So what is the significance of that? What does that mean for the future of diabetes, whether it's research or cure possibilities?
Yeah, so maybe we can find ways to preserve, maintain the beta cell function at this time point, especially in long-term type 1D cases. Patients have diabetes for a long time, and you know, the longer you have diabetes, the higher the risk to develop late complications, right? And maybe there's a way to preserve, to block the immune system, preserve the beta cell function, or maintain a stable glycemic control, and also to prevent or delay the late complication of the disease. So
what, this might be a silly question, but what can I do as the patient in the meantime to help extend the life of my beta cells? Is there anything I can do, or is that more external forces you're trying to add in, like a shot or a...
No, you mean, yeah, but I really liked your representation, talk, because I think having a healthy and balanced life, like healthy... in terms of healthy food and exercising, it really helps to keep your blood glucose in a healthy range and level, right? And prevent the late complication of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
But it cannot really influence your immune attack against your beta cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we are doing. That's our job to
find
out why they're attacking it and what can we do to turn it off, you know, kind of the immune system from... But we don't want to turn the whole immune system off. We want just find these cells who are responsible for destroying
just,
them. Yeah.
Just the naughty ones.
Yeah, not just the bad guys. Yeah.
The bad guys. Yeah.
Just the bad guys. Not the whole immune system. Yeah.
So, with myself being someone who still has some functioning beta cells, would you say that, or is there any way of knowing that being in range, in the healthy blood sugar range, helps them to live longer, or you know, would being out of range make them die off faster, or does that have nothing to do with it?
No, thank you. It's good for being a good range is good for you to your overall health.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even the last beta cells which are present, we don't know how much insulin they produce. We can measure C-peptide, right? But but it doesn't really affect your blood glucose level.
Okay. So this question feels like it should be simple, but I want to ask it anyways. Why is it important to study human tissue samples versus the mice samples that you've been using for decades?
Because humans are different, right?
Yeah.
And it, what we found in mice, we couldn't, even the, we can learn from our mouse studies, like maybe about the immune cells. We, in mice, CD4 and CD8 T cells are very important, and now we found out that in humans they're very important too.
Hmm.
And we can, but all the studies that we perform, or let's say clinical trials, were conducted according to the findings from the mouse studies. But in humans, their clinical trials were not successful.
Mm.
So in order to really understand and treat and prevent the human type 1 diabetes, we need to understand what's happening in the human pancreas. And even the islets are different in human islets are different compared to mouse islets. The architecture is different. The arrangement of beta alpha cells is different.
Yeah.
And you know, my mouse models are usually genetically identical, and so we and when you can induce diabetes in mice, and you have a specific starting point, and then you you know when they develop the disease in humans, we can predict, but it's hard for us to say this, you know, when people will develop it.
Right. So it sounds, sorry to cut you off, it kind of sounds like the mice models are for the interns and the grad students, and then you move to the human models, the NPOD, yeah, right? When you start to develop a higher knowledge and it's actual trials towards that cure or towards that procedure, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the more accurate way to study, it sounds
just
like.
Because human mice are different. But mouse model, mice are very well known, and it's easier, you know, to try different trials in general to perform experience. And in humans, it's not easy to get enough material. In general, get pancreas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mice are available, and
right,
they buy them. But humans, it's tricky. And yeah, that's why we're very grateful for the families and donors who donate the organs.
Of course.
Research, and very appreciated, and I know it's a very sensitive topic also, right?
Of course,
but
yeah,
families want to accelerate the research, mm-hmm, and the investigation, the science, and
there's a chance that one day my pancreas might be part of NPOD.
Yeah.
I'm an organ donor, so
yeah, that's great.
My organs are
you an NPOD donor, or
I don't know, do you have to specify to be NPOD, or is it just,
do you have a card? Yeah, I usually have to.
Otherwise, interesting. I just thought that being an organ donor was going to get my parts to where they needed to go.
No, maybe you're very healthy, right? So maybe they will use it for other transplantations. So, yeah, that's why we have the card, and you can sign up online to receive even more information.
Okay. What's the website that people can go to if they are interested in that?
It should be on the back of the card.
Let's see if I can find it.
JDRF, I guess, and
Paul. JDRF is involved in that.
Yeah, it was founded by GDRF like in 2007.
Interesting.
And it's like GDRFNPOD.org, I guess, and there's a link.
Might be NPOD.org.
Yeah.
We'll have to look for that, and we'll include it in the show notes. Oh, it looks like you can contact them through email, which is NPOD, which is NPOD, at pathology.ufl.edu. So that looks like the best way to get that started. I'm looking through the pamphlet right now. Here it is. Found it. You go to jdrfnpod.org. So it's jdrfnpod.org. That's where you can go to find more info on it. I'm looking at the card in front of me. That took me way too long to find. That is my fault. But what are some important findings from the NPOD studies that you can tell me about with type 1 diabetes?
So one of the important studying findings I already mentioned is that long-term cases, long-term donors still had preserved or still had intact beta cells producing insulin. And the other important finding was characterizing immune cells, which play an important role in beta cell destruction, like CD8 cells. Yeah, so I think for my project, these are very important findings, and to study the disease.
Yeah. I have in my notes that I should ask you what type 1 diabetes is, and now I'm curious. How would you define it? What are your parameters, I guess I could say?
You mean
So like, what is the scientific way that you would describe type 1 diabetes?
When you measure the out antibodies, so you know there's an immune system out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
The autoantibodies and how, of course, your beta cells respond to glucose, right? If you do oral tests or IV tests. But sometimes it's also good to know your gene. Like when we want to predict the disease or stratify the risk of the disease,
mm-hmm,
it's good also to measure your HLA, whether you're predisposed for disease, yeah. But
what does HLA stand for?
Human leukocyte antigen. It's like there are different alleles which gives you a higher risk to do, to develop the disease. And
so that's more to see if you are at risk for diabetes?
Yeah, more at
risk. So I wouldn't have any benefit if I took that lab test now?
No, because you already have it. So,
but one less test for me to take.
It just gives you a kind of a risk, but it doesn't mean that you will develop it. Because it's a complex disease, and there are also environmental factors.
Right, lots of different triggers that may play a role.
Yeah, they play a role. So even though you have maybe the risk genes, it doesn't mean that you will develop the disease.
So then you just live in fear, hoping you don't get it until...
Yeah, that's why I wouldn't test
me. Maybe we don't test ourselves. Yeah, I don't know. That's
a tough one. It doesn't mean that you will develop autoantibodies. Sometimes it depends which ones, and maybe sometimes they disappear in life, and
I think that's an interesting question that a lot of people would face is, do I want to know if I'm at risk, or would I rather just find out that I have diabetes one day?
So I would like, I mean, if you have, let's say you have type 1 diabetes, and in your case, I would check your son or your daughter just in case.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if they have autoantibodies and they develop even more autoantibodies, then it's better for you to know whether they are at risk to develop type 1 diabetes, in case you put them on insulin in time and not too late. You don't want it to be in a hospital, right?
Right.
With a severe ketoacidosis.
Yeah.
To kind of prevent the severity of the disease, I mean, at the diagnosis.
Yes, I guess it is better. It's funny because I was thinking that as myself. I'm like, would I want to know, or should I just like someday find out that I have diabetes? But then you were like, oh, what about your kids? And I was like, yep, we're testing.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it is more important to know. I think that if they did have the antibodies, you said it's a risk factor, it's not a guarantee. That just means that, maybe once a month we test their blood sugar. We see if it's high, or maybe we go back twice a year to get more tests done.
Every 3 months, you can
3 months, yeah. Because then you're
participate
aware.
Participate in trials, like the...
Yeah.
There are different stages of diabetes development, right? And there are also different trials ongoing, or just, where they test the autoantibodies, especially from parents who have, or even siblings who have type 1.
Right. So I think it is always better to be prepared.
And you enroll in a trial, be part of it, and then they will test it every few months, and then you...
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea to include, be part of it.
I agree. And that is also an opportunity for the results to be shared. Is that correct? For research findings?
Yeah.
So that way they can find genetic mappings to see at what point they got diagnosed and which triggers did actually affect them.
Yeah, they look also in like whether they maybe got an infection, or they're watching their diet. What are they eating? Is it gluten-free?
Right.
Or just to have an idea what might cause it, what contributes. But
and I believe TrialNet is one of them that does some testing. I think they're outside, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think that is a very important thing, not only for yourself to be aware of what the future might hold, but also to give that data to the scientists that are researching and trying to figure out what the triggers are.
Yeah, we don't know yet, but
there
are some. Usually there. Maybe there are some triggers.
And it's better to know about them.
Yeah, so we don't know exactly, but
many
factors influence, so it's not an easy disease to study, and pancreas is not an easy organ to work in.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah, so, it's a challenging disease, I would say.
Yes.
But I'm very...
To research and to live with.
But I'm very, grateful and lucky to work on human samples. It's amazing to have, to understand the human disease, because I worked with mice before and it's still different.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm closer to humans and I'm closer to maybe find something and to better understand the disease.
And if you do find something that works, it's more likely to stick and work for everyone. Rather than if you find it works on mice, there's hundreds of cures that have been developed for mice that don't work on humans.
Yeah, but they work in mice, so none of them
like, all right, mice are good to go, but
not really
still
humans,
on humans.
Yeah. Or for a very short time, and what we need in like long period.
Yeah, I'm actually also curious about your research project. What is kind of that next step for you? What are you working on?
So I'm talked about CD8 T cells, and my project is about characterizing these cells,
right?
Like just counting them and to investigate the number and the location of these cells in the human pancreas and how the characteristics change or develop with disease progression, and whether the number of these cells changes with disease progression. And that's basically my project. And
that's incredible.
Yeah, so I started with it 2 years ago when I moved to US, to San Diego.
It's a good place to move to.
It's if great. I do it's say amazing. So myself, it's the I best love San place Diego. To do research, you know, and to live. Yeah.
Oh man,
I love it here too.
Yeah. I know today's like, oh man, the weather's not great, and it's still amazing.
It's still amazing to be here, to get the opportunity to work on, you know, this project.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky.
Before we let you go, I want to ask, what is that next step for you? What is your dream in the next 5 years? What would you like to accomplish?
I would like to move, kind of, you know, to, I would like to better understand the disease. I would really like to know, in my case, I would like to find out what exactly these CD8 cells recognize, what's their target.
Hmm.
It would be amazing to find that, because this is one of the crucial, you know, questions, I would say. What do they see? Why they are attacking the beta cells? Because the beta cells specific, there should be something that they recognize, and it would be amazing just to find the target first of all. And maybe later on, what triggered them to from being tolerant to this antigen, from not being tolerant anymore and attacking it, you know.
And as much as it is about baby steps, I hate saying baby steps, because baby steps makes it seem like it's not that big of a deal. But this is a large project.
Yeah, it is.
But it is about the small discoveries that lead to the bigger ones.
Yeah, you have to go step by step.
Exactly.
And
it's not just about we're finding a cure.
We have to find the target and the triggers. Tough,
and you know what steps can be taken. So there's a lot going on.
And you know, like even the material is limited. We don't have people there. Donate their organs, right? But we're using it and we're working with them on them. But there's a limitation; they're limited. So that's why we always encourage people to donate their organs.
And exactly.
So we have material and sections to study the disease.
Definitely.
And they're unique, and every patient or every donor is different. So maybe the number of cells, generally, maybe the characteristics of cells is different in one person compared to another. Patient, right? So it's good to have different donors with a different background, maybe, maybe different disease progression. You know, some of them develop disease sometimes very fast, the other after in months or years, we don't know. So it would be good to study different donors, different, the one that we just donors.
Yeah, it's a great point too that we're all unique. We're all different.
We're all unique. Yeah.
All the specimens that come in.
It's challenging then.
Yeah. There is no one size fits all. You have to take a lot of variables into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned that's why it's helpful that you have the donors, right? Mm-hmm. I want to give that link out one more time, just in case anybody is interested in joining that list. It is www.jdrfnpod.org. So that's where you're going to head into learning more about NPOD, which is where they get their donor pancreas slices from, and what they're doing there. It's a nonprofit. I actually just learned about them today. It's an incredible organization. So
they're amazing. They're doing a great job.
They're doing great things, and they're providing you with the opportunities to search for that cure for us. So we are very grateful for the work you're putting in.
Thank you.
You're helping a large community and giving us hope for the future. So thank you for all of your work.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Christine, for coming on the show today. We had a pleasure having you on and learn about more about NPOD and what you're working on with your research project. And so thank you for today.
Thank you for your time and inviting me.
Of course.
It was so exciting.
So everyone, that is it for today's episode on Pardon My Pancreas. Be sure to subscribe, share the episodes, and check out our past episodes. We got lots of fun stuff coming for you. And as always, keep up the fight.